Non-fungible tokens can be traded or given away for free. That means it may or may not have different owners. But what if your project demands to be non-transferable? Well, nothing to worry. For app developers of Ethereum blockchain, we have a standard to help you with. Want to know more about Soulbound NFT standard? Continue watching. Welcome to 89th episode of PPenny, a series dedicated to Ethereum improvement proposal and protocol upgrade. I'm your host, Pooja Ranjan. In this NFT special episode, we will learn about EIP 5192 minimal soulbound NFTs. About the proposal, EIP 5192 is a standard track ERC created on July 1st, is in final status, and is now available for project developers to implement in their respective projects. To provide an overview of this proposal, we are joined by today's guest and one of the co-author of the proposal, Tim Darbyshire. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Thank you for having me.
Maybe kick off this with a quick introduction, your way to Ethereum community and the journey so far.
Yes. Yeah. My name is Tim Daubenschütz. I go by the handle Tim Daub, usually on Twitter. I'm a blogger and a freelancer. I work right now in music NFTs. I've been historically working a lot with NFTs, even like some people would say like prehistoric NFTs. And most recently, I've been focusing a lot of my attention on soulbound tokens, account bound tokens, and new types of like properties and so on.
That sounds so interesting. Thank you so much for the introduction. And without further ado, let's peep in.
Nice. Yeah, thanks for the intro. Basically, I'm doing a talk where essentially the entire talk is also an Ethereum Magician's post, because we have this nice way of doing slideshows in here. And then also for me, it's better to formulate a story around. And so this talk is going to be about EIP 5192 minimal soulbound NFTs. And basically, I have structured this talk as like a story that is not very long or very complex or anything, but it starts at 2 a.m. in the morning and with me sitting in front of the computer and hammering into the keys this proposal, this idea I have, because essentially I couldn't sleep and I was like, okay, maybe I need to like get this out of my head and into the document, and so I can stop thinking about this. So really this starts like with kind of sketching this idea. And as Pooja already mentioned, now it's a final proposal. It reached status final, I think, sometime in September. And so this is now like really a thing. But I think in order to describe this proposal, it would not be fair to go back to the original creation date, which was the 1st of July, because I think the work that we ended up doing with this proposal starts already way earlier, and it starts with this specification of EIP 4973 account bound tokens. And even way beyond that, I ended up having to draw like this almost like a timeline of the different events that ended up leading to me proposing this minimal soulbound token design. And I want to walk you through this entire journey, because I think it's important for everyone to understand where we are like coming from this and what were the previous challenges that we were facing. So essentially, I think it all starts in January when Vitalik posts this now famous blog post called Soulbound, where he basically describes this asset class in World of Warcraft that is genuinely new. It's non-skeuomorphic in the sense that it doesn't derive from like old types of property, like private property or public goods. And basically, as an ex World of Warcraft player myself, it immediately resonated with me. And I seemed to like immediately understand what he meant by that proposal, where in World of Warcraft, you had like the standard items that would comply to the general rules of private property. But then you also had these like soulbound items that you could only acquire when you were doing some really challenging and like also coordinational or socially challenging tasks, like, for example, going into a like joining a raid group and then entering a dragon's lair, and like everyone had to coordinate via like a TeamSpeak server with their voices, and people had to stay like in this configuration for many hours, and like every character would have to walk a certain way and do a certain spell or whatever, and only then the dragon could be slain by these 40 people. And so when that happened, the dragon dropped like a very valuable loot that you would not get if you were like slaying basically smaller beasts or whatever. And so the game designers were then exposed to this problematic of people selling these items that you could only get when you were doing these social things on the auction house, right? And that was the reason why then a special item was introduced that was called a soulbound item. And the idea of the soulbound item is one where once picked up from the character, from the World of Warcraft character, it binds to the soul of the character. And so while you can just irregularly use it, you can destroy it, you can put it in your bank account, you can put it in your bag or whatever, or you can also, you know, use it, you cannot sell it on the marketplace. And so this item within the World of Warcraft, it will never have really a financial value. And this is really something that inspired me, especially when I then went to Colorado, to ETH Denver in February, and I heard people at Shelling Point and other events like talk about like this non-skeuomorphic property. I think a lot of people at the time were also talking about Harburger taxes, Harburger property, these like ideas from Glenn Whale's book, Radical Markets. And so I think after coming home from ETH Denver, I had this idea of building a new type of property that was kind of in between private and public property. And so I think when I then committed to the Ethereum EIP GitHub on April Fool's Day, my first version of account-bound tokens, which is, as I said, the precursor to EIP 5192, it was really with this intention of solving kind of non-transferable token, as I think Nicola Greco had initially outlined in the GitHub issue 1238. While that was really in the beginning, like really widely discussed, and we were like having our fun. I'm a freelancer, so I was also engaging with clients that started to be interesting in this. I think the pivotal moment in this entire journey was when then, like roughly a month later, Glenn Whale, the person had also talked about Harburger taxes and so on, and Vitalik and Pooja Olhaver then published their decentralized society paper that was specifically talking about soulbound tokens in a kind of a new context, where they framed it more around like claims and as a means to make attestations and move them, for example, on chain or to use them with zero knowledge proofs. And they also, which I think I understand at the time, they were not pointing to any necessary like proposal that was already existing, because I think they had like a specific vision that they thought this should be somehow. And so for us, I think what this really meant with EIP 4973 was that we ended up getting bombarded with like engagement, essentially. Like, here is a screenshot that I took in preparation for a talk at DEF CON, where you can see that at the bottom of the screenshot, you can see the amount of views that account-bound tokens created in terms of views. And this is on a yearly basis, right? So this is like one of the most viewed proposals on the entire forum. And then it's also actually the most controversially discussed one as well. And so I think for us, though, what that really meant is, since we were really not prepared to work with this kind of engagement, was that we were basically, overwhelmed in communicating the vision that we ended up having also with regards to this, framing it more from this perspective of World of Warcraft and as this new type of property, more like World of Warcraft approach. So I think like after that and being in this like soulbound summer kind of scenario where there was a lot of attention around this thing, I think at the end of it in July, I had grown also a bit like frustrated with the work on account bound tokens. I think necessarily because for once, like we just had seemed to have hit like a local maxima with what we were doing. And the thing is, I think one of the superpowers, and this is also something that I want to highlight in my talk here today, is that the Ethereum magicians, it's truly a magical place, because it basically can post your idea on there and you get all of this feedback that you would have never thought about it. But in the case of account bound tokens, I think the controversy or like the discussion in general, I think pointed quite heavily to one point of contention, which was around this idea that account binding really limits and also demotivates people to rotate their crypto keys, which is considered then to be like really an anti-pattern in the space where, you know, if technically you should rotate your keys every now and then to prevent kind of the worst things from happening in case your key leaks. And so this is like a standard operational security practice. And if we are issuing NFTs to accounts and we make them permanently locked to those accounts, right, then there starts to be this problem where people are either not rotating their keys anymore, or they get like a bit demotivated, or like they don't really know what to do. And for us, while we potentially on a theoretical level, we were like arguing against it, and we said something like, you don't have to issue account bound tokens against EOA accounts. You can also issue them against contracts, and then the contract can proxy basically the account, which I guess nowadays people genuinely understand as account abstraction, as I guess, like, or account abstraction based on contracts. I end up also accepting, or I had to accept myself, that this is more of like a theoretical argument than it is really something practical that people then also accept in the context of defining a Solidity interface. And so I think, and this is, and now we're like already 10 minutes in or whatever, and now I'm mentioning finally 5192. This is the moment. This is my state of mind, basically, when 5192 is created at night. And I'm like, maybe we like hit a dead end with account bound tokens. And like, I'm trying to basically figure out the solution space. And maybe it's a good head to address this problem in a really different way than I had initially thought with account bound tokens. And so there I was basically typing this new proposal that would solve the problem in a different way. And I think an additional motivation for this is also one where I saw basically, you know, since the DSOC paper came out, then people got like really interested in implementing soulbound tokens on Ethereum, right? And nobody really like knew how to do that. And so people were Googling around, and I was also keeping track of the space and so on. And I ended up finding like all of these, yeah, like simple Medium tutorials on how to implement soulbound tokens. And they were suggesting that what you can do is you can use the ERC 721 standard for NFTs, and that you revert on all of the transferring functions, because then you make the token non-transferable, and that means you are binding it to the soul. And this got me really frustrated, because, you know, that was like in August, right? And we already had started working on account bound tokens in April, so we had already solved a lot of the problem that this reverting on the transfer would create. Because essentially for us, how we thought about this in the very beginning was that we said wallets, indexers, marketplaces, and other peripheral ecosystem that has to deal with the token also needs a way for the machine, or the machine, to interpret what a certain token is. And so, for example, a wallet, if they receive a soulbound token, then it would actually be nice if the wallet would be able to hide the transfer button if it recognizes that the token currently cannot be transferred, or if it can permanently not be transferred. And so I think for us, this was frustrating to see that people were reverting on the transfer, because we were like we had already solved it. So like, how were we able to then basically like communicate this to others? And so that was, I think, one of the leading motivations. And it was also, while I was not a big fan of people reverting on the transfer, and here's that function also, again, like spelled out, I think, in a very simplistic term. While we weren't a big fan of that, for me, it was also an acceptance in that moment. Like, I was like, people are doing this anyways. There are Medium articles. This is bound to happen. So we might as well also make it composable by having an ERP, right? And so then basically what I ended up typing at two at night is really this screenshot, where the entire gist of the proposal, and this is actually quite different from what we have today, is that we have this magic value that you can insert into the supports interface function that takes this 4-byte interface ID that then signals that there is like this feature of soul binding, which means that you cannot call the transfer function. So by the way, that still says EIP 555, and that had been this is like really the first commit ever. So I didn't even have the EIP number assigned to it yet. But so that I think was the first proposal. I mean, it also goes back kind of to what the magicians are great at and why it makes so much sense to submit proposals to the magicians, which is that I ended up getting feedback immediately that this opinionated approach of count binding permanently with this identifier and by reverting on all transfers was really a problem because it would discourage people from rotating their crypto keys responsibly and regularly and so on. And so I guess I was really frustrated. I was like, oh my God, like I've been like trying to solve this problem for 4 months and here I am like falling into the same trap again. I was like, that's so stupid and whatever. And so I think I was quite like discouraged somehow by that comment, even though I think it pointed out something really important that I think then later someone else pointed out and made the contract much more stronger and much less opinionated. And that was this user Aram, which also in the discussion thread then basically said, what about if instead of permanently binding to an account, we can have this view function called locked. And then for each token that exists, we basically allow this to be input as a parameter. And we return the status if the token is locked with a Boolean or not. So I think that was just really interesting. And this is such a beautiful fix to the problem of account binding, because essentially it took the opinion of whether account binding is good or bad. It took that essentially out of the standard definition. And it said, you know, this is anyways a thing that lies within the discretion of the implementer to decide. Because I think as an EIP creator, editor, whatever, it's not on me to really decide what people are supposed to do in their Solidity contracts. And then additionally, I also had previously published a blog post where I said that, you know, EIP 721 can enable these so-called like sleep minting attacks where we have this convention in an NFT contract to mint always from the zero address to the creator or the mintor's address in the first transfer. And then only we do a transfer between like two existing addresses to signalize a transfer between two parties. While this is a convention that is clear to everyone that is reading the interface definition on the EIP document, a Solidity interface cannot achieve or enforce the implementation of that, right? And people have also then abused this situation where, for example, they implemented an NFT contract that then minted this famous NFT of Beeple. And in the mint and transfer function, they emitted an event that minted to Beeple's original address, and then they transferred it out to Beeple. And so while the NFT was never really on Beeple's account, and Beeple never really minted that, when checking through the event log history of Ethereum, and if it's done in a certain conventional way, then it can still look like Beeple had originally minted that NFT. And so for me, it was clear we can anyways not enforce implementation with an interface definition. And so I think like Aram's suggestion here was very nice. And I think also really submitted a PR then and basically changed this logic. Now, before I continue with the story, I think I need some also a moment of just like defining essentially what EIP 5192 eventually has become then. So we still want to solve this problem in the soulbound token space, but we do it a bit differently now, where the proposal is an extension ERC-721, the oldest NFT standard. And then we have two events, one that we are emitting when we are locking the token and given a token ID, one that we're emitting when we're unlocking, and then this before mentioned lock function. And I think it's just important. So we also have the supports interface identifier for EIP 165 as well, so that we can have feature detection, for example, in marketplaces and so on. And just to give an overview of what that then means for people using this EIP, it means that the token is now we have an NFT token that is recognizable by machines, marketplaces, wallets, and so on, that it has potentially this changeable functionality in terms of being transferable or not. And potentially, I've forgotten to say that if the token is locked, then all transfer functions are supposed to throw, right? So we're essentially like implementing the suggestion from the from this medium tutorials, but we're saying like there's the necessary metadata for a machine to interpret also what is going on in this case. So basically, yeah, we're allowing this. And then I think what's really interesting is that basically we are also allowing such a token to be both permanently bound to an account, and on the other side of the spectrum, we're also allowing potentially permanently transferable NFT tokens with this standard and anything in between. And I think in just to contrast this, I think with the account bound tokens situation where we had like, we were going down a very specific path and a very opinionated path. I think by having this unopinionated way of specifying this interface, we are now also allowing use cases from, for example, within the DSOC paper where we could have like some more elaborate community recovery and where locked function and when something is locked and so on has a bit more like complicated logic for like, or like a social logic or whatever. So I think in a nutshell, that's kind of EIP 5192. And that's, I think that was the time when the standard also got in last call and finalized. And then what happened after that and what I think I have not documented anywhere so far is that I also think it's then important to follow up and to find also companies or projects or protocols or whatever that end up also using this and finding it useful for implementing. And so I had been loosely collaborating with a project called Public Assembly that is, like, I think, slightly related somehow to also Zora. And I had seen that they essentially had implemented a non-transferable token very much or very similarly to how these this medium article would describe it. So reverting on the transfer essentially and account binding to whoever mints the token. And I was like, wow, that's so interesting, because I think this could be like a very simple way of demonstrating the simplicity and power and the flexibility of implementing this. And so I went ahead actually and sent a PR where I imported the interface, I inherited from the interface, I implemented the required locked function, and actually I made it static where I just returned true. So this is actually an account bound token, and we are emitting a locked event on the mint function, and also we are returning true when calling the support interface functionality with the 5192 interface ID. And so I think what was encouraging in that process is that this ended up getting merged. And I also liked I'm also very happy to see this like feedback from Ian Nash, one of the contributors here, where they say, don't see a harm in integrating this. And I think this was also kind of the intention, like this idea of accepting that people, they anyways want to do this. So we might as well have like a standard to improve a little bit the composability in the future of these things. So it doesn't really like intercept with how they want to do a certain thing. But, you know, potentially if this like 5192 sees more adoption, then it could be really useful for them and for everybody else having to deal with their tokens. And so I think finally, I think this is I see this as a win, because it means also that I went not only in terms of the specifying this thing from 0 to 1, I also went from 0 to 1 in terms of getting this at least adopted by one protocol, because they ended up, as far as I know, like shipping this to mainnet, and so it's actually like being used right now. For now it only validates the non-transferable token use case and like how the account binding works and so on. And I hope that we can implement many more use cases, but just a non-transferable and account binding in general. But to conclude this talk that I have been doing now, I think the message that I want to bring across in general and that I wanted to point out with this entire talk that I have written is essentially that working in the magicians is like almost like this magic experience of asynchronous teamwork where, you know, I type something on the GitHub forum at 2 at night and it's like very far from being perfect. And then, you know, someone else sees it and gives the feedback and someone else gets inspired and ends up like sending a PR for adding a function or changing something. And we end up with something that, you know, a protocol team then later implements and ships to mainnet. And so I think that's such a great and cool like story of how the magicians work. And I think I also want to say that I think it should also serve kind of as a motivation for more people to submit their ideas to the magicians in order for, yeah, to just have more composability, more dialogue about how we are solving things, and also for each and everyone to have this magic moment of being given like meaningful feedback and constructive feedback on the forum and so on. And so, yeah, that's essentially my talk. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. It's really informative presentation. It was a great talk. From draft to standard in less than 3 months is fairly quick for a proposal, but you did mention about the background that justifies it. Either way, congratulations for reaching it into the final status. You really very well presented the bill. I love the story and the way you have put it. Like generally the format of this talk is more technical oriented, but getting the back history added a lot of value. I'm sure this presentation will be helpful to developers who are willing to have a quick overview, though we already have a project implementing it. So that's always great. Maybe we can open the floor now for people on the call to have their questions with you.
Yeah, totally.
So I've been doing research on the white paper and possible use cases to like expand the use cases so that we can actually better implement and improve the proposal. So my question is that a white paper states that SPTs may allow community recovery and where the soul is an intersectional vote of its social network. And I guess I wonder, how do you solve immutability during recovery phase? And
yeah, that's a great question. I think the community recovery aspect is so important to soulbound tokens. And I think the 5192 does not address it at all, right? We are basically just providing the interface that I guess technically you could build an implementation that does community recovery with it, and then it would still allow indexers and wallets to also understand the current like locking state. So like I could see, I mean, a very naive way of community recovery would be where, let's say we have a person designates five friends of them to be able that if all five of them vote that this otherwise permanently locked soulbound token should move accounts, that only then the lock function goes from a locked function goes from yes, this is being locked to no, this is for one transaction not being locked. But there's like, I think there's, I'm not exactly sure what the, like how the white paper describes specifically how they want to do community recovery. I'm pretty sure there's like different ways of doing it. I am aware of course, for example, how the Gnosis Safe multi-signature wallet frames. I think that's also essentially a kind of a community recovery or like a safety mechanism, or I guess you can even say like an EOA account abstraction mechanism. But I think the motivation with 5192 was really to like fix this problem of people just reverting on the transfer. And so the most immediate solution that came to mind was to provide like the minimum viable interface definition to just like to solve that.
I guess I understand your like ideation process, but I was wondering again, this unlock and locking function, like the functionalities are, is it like expandable to some extent for community recoveries in the like near future? Because I feel like there's a potential there, but also I was reading the Magician Forum and I realized that there are some like community feedback around that this flexibility isn't really supporting the credibility of SPTs. And what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that goes back to my argument in the presentation on being able to enforce implementation with ERC standards. Where I think some people would take the opinion, and this is like, I think the feedback that we're referring to, that the interface standard should not provide a conditional function for whether the token is locked or unlocked. And rather, it should, the interface definition should outline the signifier that an NFT collection permanently locks all the tokens. So similar, I think similar to how I first framed the proposal in the very beginning of the talk, where I said we could have this EIP 165 identifier that then basically taints all of the NFT collection that are permanently bound to an account. And I think the where this line of reasoning stops making sense is this argument of that the interface cannot achieve in enforcing the implementation, because we are merely like writing a document, right? And whatever the developers then end up like being able to put into function bodies is really not in my control or anyone else's control. And so essentially, I mean, even though I think that speaks against a lot of the composability rhetoric in Ethereum, I think most of the time when people are interacting with P20s, ERP720s, then there should not really be an expectation that one token behaves really like the others, because they are both part, they are both compliant to the same token standard. Because, I mean, people can really build like different mechanics into these interfaces. And as I have documented with this attack with sleep minting on NFTs, I think this kind of also shows the abuse potential of that. So for me, it was then not really a criteria to, and I would reject the argument to say that this undermines the credibility, because in the end, someone has to look at the Solidity code and has to, I guess, like look into the transfer function and see if it really reverts.
Yes. So your ideation kind of like sprout from like the user experience, like how it's compatible with the user experience on a greater end. I see.
I think. Yes, I think there's another aspect to this that is potentially worth highlighting here. People have also criticized outside of the Ethereum magician this approach of labeling an NFT as a soulbound token, where they said this is entirely unnecessary, because if you are reverting on the transfer function and the user in like assume you are like this developer and you're building this like soulbound token for your community and you control the entire user interface, the entire flow, then the assumption is that once the user hits the transfer button in, for example, a wallet like MetaMask, then they get back this revert error message, custom error message that the token is soulbound. And so actually the argument of a person that argues for that is essentially, why do we need an EIP for that, right? If like this seems to be implementable on an application level. And I think that's also important to mention, I think, from an ideation perspective, because I think exposing the user to such an unhappy path where they have to basically click the transfer button, they get like this red scary error message, and then only then, like if they're like enough technically sophisticated, then they don't lose money and they like immediately understand that this error message also means that like some blog post from Vitalik in general, like not everyone I think has this like expert context, I think. And so I think it's more important to give like wallets, marketplaces and other people, and also frankly like other contracts, the opportunity to interpret the features on a machine level and to really understand and fix these interfaces, where, for example, if we are issuing a soulbound token to a wallet, then also maybe the transfer button is completely hidden, or maybe there's also like a, I don't know, now there could be like a pop-up saying, hey, you received your first soulbound token and here are the ways you can interact with it, or you can do a community recovery or something like this, and don't have to go through like this very unhappy path.
Thank you.
Hi, Tim. That was a great presentation. I'm glad to see some movement on the EIPs for soulbound tokens. I had one question about how you see this kind of being implemented by projects, right? So if the premise is the 721 contract signals this support for 5192, and then we kind of push the non-transferability logic to the client, whereby they check whether or not the token's locked, and if it's locked, the client won't attempt to transfer. So that's great. But do you expect the smart contract developers to also kind of override that transfer function is this something like just as a backstop if they really want to make sure? So they get the UX improvements, but they also get that kind of like on-chain enforcement.
Yes. So in 5192, if the token is locked, then you are supposed to revert on all transfers, essentially. So this is, I mean, depending on the implementation, but this is what on the interface level, what we mandate, what you should do.
And then like, by the way, I totally agree with your point around like when you make an interface, you can't enforce the implementation details. It was a similar situation with EIP 2981, which was the NFT royalties. Like, obviously, mm-hmm. you'd love to be able to enforce royalty payments, but it's just kind of not possible right now. What I wanted to ask about was, what if the 721 contract, someone wraps it? So you've basically locked the token using 5192 to the 721 contract, and then someone wraps that 721 contract. What are the kind of like implications there?
It depends. Like, basically, if the, let's say we implemented a 5192 that permanently locks all tokens and the transfer functions are reverting, then I think you could not hack it, I think, on the level of the transfer functions. Now, you could, I guess, if you somehow got access to be able to emit an event on behalf of that contract and you also were able to change the storage of the mapping, then I guess you transferred it while it should technically be locked. So that's not good. Yeah, I don't really have an answer beyond that. I just think it's, yeah, I hope the implementations for this are good. I think, though, I mean, at least from the non-transferable token case, I think we're getting technically rid of a lot of code from the EIP 721 contract. I think if we're talking in terms of creating more advanced functionality where we have like community recovery and so on, I think, yeah, then it becomes more difficult. I've heard like a couple of proposals, you know, of people like when they say, when should we allow non-transferable tokens to be transferred between accounts? And for example, I've heard someone say that maybe only all of the tokens should be transferable at once. So that you can't really like sell one of them on the market or whatever, but that really only if you have to do like account recovery, then you transfer them in bulk. But I think in that case, that would also be kind of challenging. And I don't really see a solution for that yet. And I think really it's up to us now, since this is also final, I think people can rely on this and that it's not changing. And so I think some experimentation can happen and we can find things that work and that don't. And yeah.
Yeah, this is really cool. Thanks for everything.
Thank you. Yeah, I think most of the questions are now asked and answered, yet I have a couple of more for you. So my first question is the thoughts on other soulbound proposal. So 5192 is the first soulbound proposal in the final status. There are five more in different statuses and they're proposing slightly different use cases. I would like to talk specifically about two proposals. Number one is mm-hmm. EIP 5484 consensual soulbound token. This is currently in the last call and the deadline is November 5th. This proposal basically suggests an interface for a special NFT with immutable ownership and predetermined immutable burn authorization. I wonder what are your thoughts on this proposal and do you think this may help the lock and lock for burn feature which was not initially considered for 5192?
Yeah, so actually I ended up sending a very strongly opinionated feedback to that proposal in the discussion thread that I may regret also now the way I phrased it. I think the proposal is actually very strong. And I think it also implements essentially what the GSOC paper really calls out, where they say the issuer of soulbound token should actually be able to also revoke it as well. And it even goes beyond that, where it allows to specify who should be able to burn the token. So I think it's a net positive, this proposal. I think where my feedback came in and where I was like critical, or let's say where I was like wanting to add like more feedback to it, was on the part of also potentially basing this on 5192, where 5192 would then have this base layer for metadata identification and feature detection. And then on top of that, you would also have the burn functionality. And right now, the 5484 essentially has a bit of like undefined behavior around the non-transferability. And it also binds to accounts. And there's also where this rhetoric comes into about like a lock function not being credible to the ideal of permanently binding a token to an account. And I think in general, I speak as the author of 5192, that it would have been stronger if that proposal made use of 5192. But I guess that's how it is. So I'm okay also with it like this.
Right. Ultimately, it is up to the editors to like let the proposal be a standard or not. But I really appreciate you adding your feedback on Fellowship of Ethereum Magician. As you have mentioned it multiple times in your presentation, that FEM is a really good forum where we can collect feedback from entire community, project developers, so we can come up with good set of proposals which can be considered as a standard. Thank you so much for that. And my next question, the part two of this question is about EIP 5114, that is soul-bound badge. It is currently in the draft status. However, it was proposed before 5192. The proposal proposes a badge that is attached to a soul at mint time and cannot be transferred after that. So if you could talk about the difference of the two proposals, and do you think that 5192 may have any advantage in terms of specs that may have helped it move faster in the final status?
Yeah. So in terms of the history, as 5114 is from Mika Zoltu, and so Mika was very influential in the beginning of the account-bound token specification and also brought up some very valuable points, especially with regards to like account binding being this anti-pattern and other things. And so I think 5114, I would assume, is also a way, like an expression basically of saying like here's an entirely different way of dealing with account-bound tokens, where, you know, instead of binding to Ethereum accounts that can hold balances, now we would be binding to other NFTs. So what 5114 does is essentially it allows you to like consider you have like this profile picture where you are, I don't know, like a cat or whatever. And then what this proposal would allow you is to buy this character also sunglasses that you can then soul bind onto the NFT. So I think, yeah, this what I also ended up saying in the beginning is like, there's a diverse set of ideas people have around this concept of soulbound tokens. And I don't think there's like necessarily one really like right idea or whatever. I really like the proposal myself. But coming, you know, my background has been to build more primitives for this new type of property class. And so for me, it's just personally not that useful in how I need to work with clients. But I think in general, it's very interesting. And I think if that ends up also getting standardized, I can see that having like a broad range of application, especially in the NFT, PFP world, where I think already people are doing this composition of different NFTs, like avatars, where you can basically, you know, you can buy merch for your avatar and so on, and in gaming and so on. So I think it's a nice proposal. I mean, Mika also has a very nice way of writing and laying these things out. So yeah, absolute recommendation, of course.
Thank you. Mika Zoltu has been a great contributor for Ethereum repository. He was an editor who had made a lot of impacts and proposal coming from them. I'm happy to hear that people think positively about it, and we hope to have it in a standard form one day. Well, my last question is about the current EIP process. You already mentioned about one other proposal, but I know there is one more in review status. So I'd be curious to hear your general experience with EIP documentation and if you may have any suggestion to improve the current process.
Yeah, it's a tough question. I think there's, this has been like quite an experience for me over the last 6 months. It's important to highlight that the opportunity that this gives to into the hands of people that are motivated to do like a bit more long-term work. So like none of my proposals is really useful today. Most of them are aspirational, and the adoption timeframe is probably like a few years, like 3 to 5 to 10 years, whatever, if any adoption ends up happening. Anyways, my work in the Magicians Forum, I have really liked it. I think, as I pointed out in the talk, basically it's essentially like a pipeline to get your idea validated, to get other people to look at it and feedback. I think where people probably are unhappy with the ERC proposal specifically is that there is no like authoritative like a stamp or whatever that people say this is now something official that everyone should be using, but that instead it's this, and I've said this in my lightning talk at DEF CON 2, it's more like this stream of different threads that end up like finding consensus very slowly over time, and this takes just way longer in terms of adoption than, for example, if you have an expert committee making a quorum decision on like implementing a certain thing, right? Where I think this is much more actionable than if each person individually makes a value judgment on whether they should adopt a thing or not. And so I think while I'm not suffering from the pessimism or the impatience, I have heard other people kind of like suffering for, or like I've heard the concerns, and I always like try to point out then that maybe this is like a long-term thing. But yeah, I think in like also other places it's like this. And yeah, it's in the end we're working on standards. So yeah.
Right. That's very valuable to us. Just for information, we are trying to like have a forum for people to who are proposing standard on a similar topic, be in the same room and talk about it. In this direction, recently we started URL and URI meeting, which is now moved towards VolitDev meeting, which happens once a month and led by Sam Wilson, but CatHeaders are supporting that as well. So we are hoping to have small working group created around a certain topic so we can streamline the process and let the best proposal be a standard.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. I think I think in the soulbound token realm, at least, probably engaging the community in a working group would have yielded a more unified result where each and everyone would be pulling on one rope instead of many somehow. Yeah, I don't know. I'm also a kind of like a, I also like the idea of everyone just working by themselves and then like having this chaos somehow that ends up like bubbling up the best solution. So yeah, I don't know. I think both is valuable in the end.
Right. This is an experiment. Let's see if it works out. Well, it's time to wrap up. Any final thing that you would like to add or share with the Ethereum community?
I just wanted to thank you for giving me the chance to speak here. And yeah, I'm just very happy that this got finalized, and I hope people find it useful. And yeah, if people have information, feedback, questions, then yeah, you can find me on the Ethereum Magicians Forum, and there's emails and Telegram handles and whatever all included. So thank you very much.
Tim, thanks for joining us today to talk about EIP 5192, the latest NFT standard. We appreciate your contribution to Ethereum's EIP repository, and I look forward to have increased adaptability of this standard and maybe have you on the show again with another proposal to discuss.
Thanks. Yeah, I hope so.
And on this note, thanks to everyone watching or listening to this special episode on NFT standard. Should you have any questions, let us know in the form available in description, or leave a comment or reach us at ETHCatHeaders Discord. Check out description for link to useful resources and guest Twitter to follow. We will be back with another interesting ERC proposal. So stay tuned and keep sharing your love with Ethereum CatHeaders. Have a good one.